You know, I was at a hockey game last week, and there wasn't as much energy as I saw tonight. I'll tell you. Not only that, who said that? You paid too much, what? It's a very good team indeed, indeed. There's very few seats available. Actually, if I had some tickets, I could have been able to scalp them the way of what I heard. So it's a great evening. Alors, j'aimerais vous souhaiter tout simplement à tous la bienvenue ce soir. J'aimerais souhaiter la bienvenue à Madame la Principale. J'aimerais souhaiter la bienvenue à Monsieur le Doyen. Je ne mentionne pas leur nom car ils devront être introduits plus tard. Et mon seul travail, moi, ce soir, is only to introduce our director, Guy Rouleau, Dr. Guy Rouleau. He's really the coach. He's really the leader of the Neuro. And basically, we're glad to have him here. He came back home a little bit less than 2 years ago after additional training at the Saint-Justin Center of Research. But it took a little bit of training, and also here we are. And without further ado, thank you so much for being here. We're proud of what the Neuro does, and Guy's going to tell you all about it. Guy, it's all yours.
Merci beaucoup, M. Bougie. Et c'est vrai qu'on est toujours en train d'apprendre. Alors, yes, it was a nice experience at the University of Montreal, but I'm glad to be home. So, premièrement, j'aimerais souhaiter la bienvenue à tout le monde ici, à l'Institut de neurologie, qu'on appelle avec affection le Neuro. Et c'est vraiment un bel événement. Nous sommes ici pour essentiellement célébrer l'expansion du Centre Ludmer en neuroinformatique. Et cette expansion-là est pour inclure le groupe de Dr. Evans et le Neuro. Et cette expansion est vraiment le résultat direct de la vision et de la générosité de M. Ludmer et de sa famille. Alors, merci. So, Irving Ludmer is a longtime friend of McGill. And for many, many years, has been a very generous supporter of various causes, especially in the field of psychiatric research at McGill. He's a graduate from McGill in engineering. I won't say what year, but Irving, it's the year I was born. So I will likely not forget it. So in 2013, the Irving Ludmer Family Foundation basically created the center with a donation of $4.5 million to the Douglas and the Jewish General Hospital to establish this center, the Ludmer Center for Neuroinformatics and Mental Health. However, there was one piece missing of that center, and this event is really to add that piece, to have a complete center. So the foundation has given an additional $2.9 million to McGill, the M&I, to expand the center. And now the center has all the different components it needs to be a success. So I should mention that McGill Faculty of Medicine and the M&I also contribute to this. And so the center has over $10 million in total support. And so this is a significant sum of money for a very, very important and ambitious project. So the Ludmer Center provides a unique and innovative approach to mental illness. The overall objective is to identify risk factors that allow the early identification of people who are at risk for mental illness and to be able to develop earlier interventions, new treatments. And the center brings together three research teams, Michael Meany's Epigenetics Center at the Douglas, Celia Greenwood's expertise in biostatistics at the Jewish, and Alan Evans' brain imaging and big data research at the Neuro. I'll mention now that when I first learned about this and met with Michael and Alan, I didn't think it was possible. And I didn't think it was possible because here you have a bunch of alpha males. And I just couldn't imagine them actually, you know, being excited and wanting to work together. And, you know, I'm still amazed every time I see them together. They just seem to, you know, really love what they're doing and love to work together. So this is to me, the most amazing part of all this, is to see this kind of working together and real affection, actually. So the diseases targeted are many, those of development, autism, schizophrenia, those of degeneration, for example, like Alzheimer's disease. Now, I'd like to invite you to turn your attention to the screen so we can show a short video that showcases the Ledmer Center, their exciting research going on at the center.
I think what we have in psychiatry is an unacceptable approach to diagnosis and to understanding how to direct patients to particular treatments. We use essentially a treatment approach that was developed in the 1950s and 60s. It's nothing more than a symptom checklist. A patient comes into the office of a doctor and outlines their complaints. And on the basis of that report, we make a diagnosis and then direct patients to particular treatments. All of this occurs despite the fact that in the year 2014, we can collect genomic data from the individual, we can scan the entire epigenome, we can image the brain. The problem is, how do we use that data in the service of better diagnosis, and in particular to predict who's going to respond best to what particular treatment?
I'm a scientist at the Jewish General Hospital and the Lady Davis Research Institute, and the Ledmer Center has grouped me at the Jewish General with Michael Meany at the Douglas Allen Evans at the Montreal Neurological Institute. We have three very different areas of expertise, and our group comes in to try and put all of that data together in order to draw some conclusions from it that make sense.
Well, this is big science. And it's a bit ambitious because it's so multidisciplinary and it falls outside the realm of the traditional funding agencies. What the Ledmer support has allowed us to do is to bring together these different groups, and not only within our own laboratory, but perhaps as importantly to partner with groups across the world. So it's allowed us to exist as a hub, if you will, internationally for bringing biological sciences into intervention programs.
We are communicating increasingly with our colleagues around the world. We have partners in Latin America studying child development, in Singapore studying child development. We have partners in Europe and Korea and India looking at Alzheimer's disease. Our colleagues in Germany, they took one brain from somebody who donated her brain, and they took that brain and they sliced it, just like a deli slicer, 7,400 times 20 microns thick. And when I say 20 microns, that's thinner than a human hair. And then we had the task of using computational techniques to realign and correct all of the distortions such that we could put all those slices back together again in a coherent three-dimensional brain.
So the gift from Mr. Ledmer has really been transformational for my group. What it has enabled is the hiring of these permanent staff people in my group. And so having stable staff there, I'm creating a kind of base of knowledge that the students can learn from and capitalize from. It speeds up their work. It speeds up my work, of course, as well. It really is a great advantage for the research.
We need this basic infrastructure. Irving Ledmer's gift provides support for exactly that infrastructure, so we've got the infrastructure secure for years to come.
I think the Ledmer Center is going to grow substantially over the next 5 to 10 years. I'm hoping that the community that will be created through this Ledmer Center is going to be really transformational in terms of what we can learn about mental health and how the brain functions.
Recently, one of the fellows in my lab came up with a new finding using a computational model to explain a very fundamental aspect of Alzheimer's disease. This came as a great surprise to me. It's his work, And that's the joy of working in this lab. One of the fellows comes running and saying, look what I've just found.
What I foresee is actually a world of better mental health. So mental illness, we often see as something that affects only an unfortunate small segment of the population. Now, that's wrong. These diseases are far more prevalent. But mental health is something that affects all of us. As we say at the Douglas, there's no health without mental health. So the challenge isn't simply that of preventing mental illness. It's really of enhancing the capacity of every individual for a productive and healthy and happy life.
Thanks to those who made this really quite informative video. Now it's my pleasure to introduce McGill's principal and vice chancellor, Professor Suzanne Fortier. Professor Fortier n'a que récemment fini sa première année à McGill, mais on peut voir un peu de partout à l'université les fruits de ses efforts, de sa vision. Et je dois admettre que la réalisation de cette expansion du Centre Ludmer en est un. Il n'y a aucun doute que Professeur Fortier a un rôle très important dans la création de cette entité. Alors, Professeur Fortier.
Merci, Dr. Rouleau. Je dois vous dire que je suis vraiment, vraiment ravie d'être ici ce soir pour cette belle célébration. It is so great to see so many of you who came this evening, on this gorgeous evening of October, to celebrate with us at the fantastic center, the Ludmer Center. It's wonderful to see many young people also, students who are with us this evening. Alors, merci beaucoup d'être avec nous. We saw it in the video. This is a fantastic team that is being brought together. Jacques talked about the excitement in this room that is even bigger than at the Bell Center. And Guy talked about a few alpha males, I guess that's how you call them. I call them incredibly strong players. And this is what this initiative is doing. It's bringing together the kind of team that we need to be successful. To be successful in one of the most important games that the human race will ever be participating into. And that is understanding our own brain. Is there anything bigger that we need to do than that? It's fantastic to see different institutions getting together, being part of the team, researchers who come together with their own aspirations, their ambitions, their drive, and putting their complementary expertise together in the team and bringing their students as part of that. So we're going to be nurturing this talent in this great, great center. Of course, you know that Montreal has built an incredible reputation for its work in neuroscience. Je dois avouer que je suis ravie d'avoir Brenda Milner avec nous ce soir. You know, this city has been home to giants of the field, and this is what we're seeing again and again, the ability to attract giants in the field, to give them the opportunities, the tools they need to do their work, and to nurture more giants in the field. Et je dois vous dire que partout où on va au monde, les gens connaissent la force de Montréal dans les neurosciences et connaissent l'importance du travail qui se fait ici. Alors, c'est vraiment stimulant, vraiment inspirant de voir ce travail-là. Et on en est tous très fiers. And that pride that we feel, I know I feel it personally, but I know we feel it at McGill. We feel it at the Jewish, at the Douglas Center. I can tell you, people of this city, this province, this country feel it too. Because we know that this is an area where we are best in the world, and we're very, very proud of it. Let me say a few words of thanks to the Ludmer Family Foundation. It is so, so important what you're doing for us, and I cannot tell you how grateful I am. It was a real pleasure for me to meet Irving, I must say. Évidemment, c'est un gradué, un diplômé de McGill. Of course, you know, I always like to see graduates of McGill, particularly graduates like Irving, who've had such an impact, have had such a wonderful career, and giants in their own profession. But what inspired me the most about Irving was his passion for science. He is a true visionary. He truly shares our excitement and our passion for science and for the potential that science brings to all of us in this world. You know, it is the dream of every scientist, from the moment we enter the field as science to the day we die. And it is the dream of every institution that owes these scientists that we might be participate in a breakthrough discovery, something that will truly change the way we look at our world, that will have an impact. It is a dream, and it is fantastic that there are some people who share our dreams and are there to help us accomplish them. And I have to say, Irving, that what you're doing for us is not only equipping our scientists to pursue that dream, but it is also inspiring us and also challenging us to make that dream come true. Because I must say that there are probably no breakthrough discoveries that are more important to us as human beings than the discoveries we're making about our own brain. Alors, merci énormément. De nous tous. Merci.
I'd like to invite Mr. Ledmer to come and say a few words. Irving.
So after listening to everybody speak, I just threw away my speech. And because everything I was going to say has been said. But just a couple of comments about, let's take Michael Meany, for example, in his great, great search in epigenetics. So epigenetics is essentially the impact of the environment on the brain, and this should result in some markers, and that's the whole purpose of the search, is to try to determine what are the markers that indicate somebody is vulnerable for some kind of a disease. And mental illness has not been a favorite for financial support because of the stigma that goes with mental illness. And yet, you know, a lot of money goes into cancer research, into cardiological research, and so on. But without, even with a very healthy body, if somebody is terribly unhappy, suffering from depression or schizophrenia or any of these diseases, then what's the point? You can't really enjoy your life. And so the difficult challenge here was to try to put together the best possible team in a multidisciplinary fashion and across various institutes, which is not easy. And it's hard to recognize that this is a new way to organize things. It's certainly not the straight faculty organization that works well in teaching at a university. But universities must adapt like everybody else. It's all Darwinian, and that's what Michael has been teaching us. And so the adaptation has to be that you work in concert with others, because nobody can afford to hire all the best scientists in the world and try to do something on your own. And so the example I'd like to use is the Large Hadron Collider. And there everybody was looking, so you had the Big Bang, and then how was matter formed from all that energy? And Professor Higgs, who teaches at Edinburgh or Glasgow University, is a guy who proposed there had to be a Higgs field, and in that field, the Higgs boson. And that's particle physics, and my friend Dr. Pripstein is here from Berkeley, and he can tell you a lot more about that. He's the winner of the Sakharov Prize in physics, and he could tell you a lot more than I can, but in the standard model, right, Moshe, that's the way it works. So there had to be a Higgs boson, or an equivalent. And so the finding was made, and the weight of the particle was close to what they had predicted for the Higgs boson. And so we now know that the theory of how the matter started and planets and so on in the universe took place. What we don't know is this quantum brain, and I really believe it's a quantum kind of a supersymmetry that drives mankind in a reaction to the environment and a reaction to matter, the matter being our flesh and blood. So you think about these kind of things, and it's my absolute pleasure and delight to have met some scientists who are brilliant and who together and working together, and that's just the start. So what we're doing here is just the beginning, and we'd like to see a Quebec-led initiative in order to lead this into formalizing relationships around the world with people who share the same ideas, but maybe are approaching it in a different manner. And the different manner in today's world is one has to think in terms of stem cells, nanotechnology, and bioengineering, and also particle physics. Because we are a part of this universe, and we are made up of the same kind of stuff that when we look at the galaxies, that's what we see. So the 150 billion neurons that run around in our heads are just part of a galaxy, and they form their own galaxy. Many pathways shared by many neurons, and that's what our people are looking at. And that's why it's a big data project. And you need supercomputers, bandwidths, wide bandwidths, and all the rest of it, storage for data, which we don't have, but we're going to get, and many other things, connectivity, and all the rest of the things we talk about, the wiring up of all of these different places that will enable us to work with people around the world. We can't get no billions of dollars. Obama just announced that in the United States, they're going to sponsor brain research. That's going to be his legacy project for $3 billion. The only way we can compete with that is by better brain power and by a focus and by having partnerships around the world and people contributing all to the same project and all trying to solve the same problem in maybe different manners, but complementary. And that's what our guys are great at. They know a lot of people, they make a lot of the connections, and you'll see more and more of that. So let me tell you that I'd like to thank the scientists, I'd like to thank Quebec for its support, and I'd like to thank all of the people who run the hospitals, the directors, the scientific directors, and the scientists and their staffs of postdocs and PhD students and so on. It's wonderful to meet you people and to work with you. Just a frustrated researcher. But it's basic research at its finest. We owe nothing to anybody, no commitments for products or anything else, and nor will there be, not as long as I'm around. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lemmer. As everyone can see, this is not an accident that this center was created in the way it is. And it was nice to see clearly your vision, Mr. Lemmer, and thank you for that. Maintenant, j'aimerais introduire notre modérateur et nos panélistes aujourd'hui. Alors, notre modérateur est le Dr. Rémi Quirion, le scientifique en chef du Québec et un des grands neuroscientistes du Canada. Before taking the role of chief scientist in 2011, Dr. Quirion was Vice Dean of Science and Strategic Initiatives at the Faculty of Medicine at McGill and Senior University Advisor in the Health Sciences Sector. He also served as a Scientific Director of the Douglas Mental Health University Research Institute Center, Research Center. And I don't know how long he was director of that center, but I won't say. It started after I was born, but Remy did an absolutely remarkable job with his partners at the hospital to create what is an absolutely excellent research center in psychiatric research, brain research. And beyond our campus, Dr. Grillon had many other senior positions, including he was the inaugural scientific director of the CIHR Institute of Neurosciences and Mental Health and Addiction. Our three panelists, and you've heard about them already a bit, but I'll give you a little bit more formal introduction. Dr. Michael Meany, James McGill Professor of Psychiatry and Neurology and Neurosurgery at the Douglas Mental Health University Institute. He's won many prizes and awards, and I won't go through them all, but I should mention one he got a few weeks ago, which is the Klaus J. Jacobs Research Prize in recognition of his groundbreaking work in child development. And if I remember correctly, that's a prize that's given out from Switzerland, right? And Dr. Alan Evans, second panelist, is a James McGill Professor of Neurology and Neurosurgery, Psychiatry and Biomedical Engineering here at the MNI. Alan as well has won many different prizes, and I won't go through them all, but I got to mention the recent one, which is just a few weeks ago or a month or two ago, he received the Margulies National Brain Disorders Prize from the University of British Columbia, which is a prize for the most impactful neuroscience research in Canada. And so, congratulations. And to complete the trio, Dr. Celia Greenwood, a senior investigator at the Lady Davis Research Institute at the Jewish General Hospital, associate professor in departments of oncology, epidemiology, biostatistics, occupational health, and human genetics. I consider Celia as being somebody in human genetics, but I guess many departments wanted to have her participate, and she brings important expertise in genetics and genetic epidemiology and statistical genetics to this team. So, panelists, please come to the front.
Peut-être je vais prendre la prérogative d'être le modérateur pour dire quelques mots de félicitations et de remerciements. Au nom du gouvernement du Québec, au nom du ministre Yves Bolduc, Yves a rencontré l'équipe Irving, Michael et Alan récemment. Célia n'était pas présente. Mais après la réunion, il m'a dit « Wow! Quel genre d'équipe est-ce que ces trois-là forment? » Un homme d'affaires qui a très, très bien réussi, très intéressé par la physique, la neuroinformatique, l'épigénétique et des chercheurs, alpha male, peut-être, il ne m'a pas dit alpha male, mais qui veulent travailler ensemble à l'Université McGill pour faire avancer la recherche, la science, la connaissance dans le domaine des maladies mentales. So he was very impressed. And what we discuss with Minister Bolduc is how can we make sure that what is done here today at McGill expands throughout the province of Quebec so that Quebec take a worldwide leadership in the field of research on mental health and mental illnesses. And Irving said that basic research is key. I fully believe that. But at the same time, once in a while, having discovery that impact on the quality of life of citizens suffering from mental illnesses is also important. So for me, being here today is a dream come true. I think the first time we met, that I met Irving, probably with Michael, maybe it's 15 years ago, I don't know, and many, many dinner. You saw the dinner in the video. But already at that time, Irving had the vision. He was trying to convince us, maybe, that you could basically do it and that the dream could come true. And just the fact that you see on this slide here, the neuro, the Jewish, and the Douglas under the umbrella of McGill University is amazing. A few years back would have been quite challenging. Now, it's a matter of fact. We take it almost for granted. But you need visionary people like Irving and the Irving Foundation family to make it happen sometime. Because us in government, in funding agency, often we just kind of adapt to this kind of situation. So I really wish the best of luck to the center, to the scientists, and to the team that are associated with these three scientists. I'm sure that they will succeed. They are building on giant, and Brenda Milner is one of them, but already they are giant by themselves. So by joining force, I'm pretty sure that they will blow us out of our mind and out of the water and find cures to some mental illnesses. Parlant de cure, parlant de recherche en santé mentale. First question, an easy one to start with. And already the colleague mentioned that a little bit. Why is it that it has been rather slow in making significant discovery in the field of mental illnesses compared to other fields like cancer or cardiovascular disease? Is it because neuroscientists are not as good as the other scientists? Or is there another answer to that question? Who wants to start? Alan. Okay. It's your home here. So.
Thanks for bunching me here. Well, I think probably the most fundamental reason is that mental illness is usually the product of distributed dysfunction. You're not looking at a brain tumor, a very focal disorder, or a stroke. It's disorganization throughout the brain and how that affects brain communication and ultimately what we see externally as abnormal behavior. Up until recently, we didn't have the tools to capture the connectivity, the organization of the entire brain as a function of time, as it changes through life. We didn't have the technology to collect the data. We certainly didn't have the technology to analyze that data. And in the last 20 years, everything has changed. So I think that answers the question.
It's a measurement issue, exactly as Alan said. If you can measure very nicely and cleanly something like your cholesterol level, then you can do quite well to find out what's controlling it. But measurement of what's going on in the brain is a much more difficult challenge, and that has changed. But it does require, of course, a lot of computational tools in order to figure out what's going on.
Michael. Yeah, I mean, I agree completely with Alan and Celia, but I think it also harkens a bit to what Mr. Legler was referring to as the issue of stigma. We've resisted the idea for many years that mental health was, in fact, a disease of any organ. People were blamed for mental illness. It was considered to be a spiritual weakness. We had conceptual barriers to cross as well. So there's no doubt that what Alan and Celia, I think, are putting on is absolutely correct. But we needed to get to the point where we start to think of mental illnesses and illnesses of the brain in the same context that we think of diabetes. And it's fairly recent. It's shockingly recent that we've, I think, arrived at that point that we can start to think of it as something that can be studied in that context.
That's very good. So I like the answer, because usually the first answer that I get as a government agency is that the government is not putting enough money in research on mental health, which is probably true as well. So a very large audience here. You already, Irving, mentioned that. You mentioned it as well. The issue of stigma. We have been talking about it a lot over the past 50 years. I think it's much more acceptable to talk about mental illnesses these days. Often the analogy I'll say is in terms of depression, for example. A man, and there is a difference between man and a woman, often, a man that will do a burnout will be kind of rewarded for that. It's because he worked hard. But a woman, it's a depression. She's a bit weak. So there's still that kind of little bit of stigma there. But what do you think, just to bring it to an issue of this week, what do you think the event that happened this week, what's the impact of such event on the stigma in the field of neuroscience and mental health? An easy question again.
Yeah, it's, you know, one of the interesting things in looking through both the CNN and the CBC stories is that there's a big section, if you'll notice, on the family background of the perpetrator of this crime. So it seems that there's this link in people's minds that there must have been something there for a long time to have caused this to go awry. In fact, if you read the document, you'll find that there's little evidence to support that that's actually the case. I think the problem is that we have a fear, in many cases, of behavior and illness. And we don't fear people who have cancer. We don't fear people who have diabetes. But there's something that keeps us at a distance of mental health. I think that the events, first of all, underscore our inability to be able to accurately predict this particular type of absolutely extreme behavior, to understand it. And then, unfortunately, what they also do is they keep us at a distance from this particular type of disorder as well. So it's a challenge, I think. I mean, I've been really assuaged by the commentary that when you read through the CBC, the Canadians have appended to this. It's sympathetic, and it shows a deeper level of understanding than we would have seen 20 years ago. And that, I think, is rewarding. But yes, it brings that challenge to the surface, both as scientists and as citizens.
Alan, no. Celia?
It does bring into sharp focus that mental illness is not some vague, abstract concept. It has very practical consequences. Just to give you another statistic, there are, in the U.S. last year, there were 3 times more suicides than homicides. How many people realize that? Okay. There's twice as many bed hours for depression than there are for cardiac disease. This has huge societal consequences, and we don't put enough resources, both scientific and funding, to deal with these issues. It's only now becoming clear, as we understand that mental illness is a very practical, tangible consequence of our brain function.
Maybe the only thing I can add to that is that there's probably a continuum, right? To say illness is to put a hard boundary on something, but there are going to be aspects of personality and aspects of behavior that can be measured in a more quantitative way, and those are very hard to do from the outside.
And maybe just a sub-question to that. Do you think that maybe in the news some were too quick to jump to mental illnesses? In the case of what we saw this week, or they were justified to go there?
Everybody's looking for an explanation. I mean,
because that could play against us, stigmatize again a bit more. Because we know little about a lot of details, but that the press was quick. It's easy to say, well, probably because they have mental illnesses. And it's probably right, but a lot of people jump very, very quickly to that. Without having, again, it's hard to diagnose, hard to quantify, so on.
Wouldn't we all like to be able to say that I understand and therefore I could fix it? I think that's natural. I don't think it's reality, mind you.
So we're not...
Modern life is that much more stressful than our parents lived through. In so many ways, whether it's addiction of its various kinds, or whether it's the pressure of too many people around you, everybody's on cell phones driving you crazy. Just urban life is that much more stressful. It has consequences in terms of anxiety and depression. And any number of mental health issues, which we up until now haven't dealt with, and it becomes more and more pressing to deal with those as our society moves ever faster.
Yeah, I must say that I was quite impressed as well a couple of weeks ago with what's called the Ebola crisis. It's probably that's very, very serious, but at the same time, the level of anxiety that it created in some communities is just amazing. You see all these people so overreacting in a sense, and when you have 24-hour news, you have to have news all the time, so you kind of create news to some extent, and in the field of stress and mental illnesses, it's not optimal for sure. Yeah. So now the easy question. Quebec, to come back to Quebec, and especially coming back to McGill, the McGill Academic Health Network. Why are we better positioned than others, that other group in the world, to really have an impact, let's say, with the creation of the Lundner Center? Michael.
I think there's a sense of tradition here. I mean, a name, for example, that I'm sure Professor Milner will recognize immediately, that in many cases is and I hope not drifting out, is that of Professor Donald Hebb. What Hebb understood is the brain as the seat of behavior and cognition and emotion, and he understood the brain as a function of the influences of genetic and environmental influences. And we're not talking about 1980s here. We're talking about Hebb's textbook of psychology.
And that's when?
About 1949, right? 1949.
Hebb, were you born in 1949?
We're still a resident, right? So Hebb is considered in many areas, particularly in the area of synaptic plasticity in neuroscience, as the father of modern neuroscience. So there's a conceptual basis that's existed at McGill and across Quebec that I think brought us to an area that was well in advance conceptually of where neuroscience was. We got there first in many cases. And of course, obviously, the legendary advances made at this institute, of course, only accelerated that development. I think we have a tradition of science in Quebec, and that's not unique to neuroscience. We see that in cardiovascular, the Institut de Région, the ERCM, by example. I mean, we see so much strength in medical research in Quebec in general. We have a population that lends itself, the Cartagin Project, for example, and the participation of our population in studies of human genetics is remarkable. Mm-hmm. The interactions, if not necessarily always at the level of directors, but certainly at the level of scientists across the institutions. We work seamlessly with people from Université de Montréal, UQAM, Laval, Sherbrooke, and Concordia. There's a collegiality here. So first of all, I think conceptually neuroscience has just been really developed here. Psychology and neuroscience were fused here in the 1960s. In many places, that didn't occur until the 80s or 90s. I think there are just many underlying currents that fostered our advances in neuroscience. Now the challenge is to capitalize on all of that, to capitalize on the great Quebec projects that exist, such as Cartagin and other areas that Guy would know also very well, and to leverage and merge those with our expertise in neuroscience and really translate them. That, I think, positions us, and I think it's our commitment to translational work as well that is key.
Thanks. Yep.
Of course, I echo everything that Michael said, particularly as regards tradition. This is a crossroads for neuroscience. It has been for decades. But I also think that we have this tradition, inter-institutional tradition, which allows us to work transparently, seamlessly across institutions. Julien Doyon, is Julien here? Julien and I established a few years ago REPREC, which is the Quebec Réseau for Neuroimaging, and all of the institutions participated in that environment. It was a wonderful teaching network that was built. And Julien continues to lead that network. It's an example of interinstitutional scientific engagement which bypasses any of the potential interinstitutional political boundaries. We don't care. The scientists are all used to talking to each other and engage with each other at every different level. All of our students, my students are at UDM, Julien's students are here. That's a tradition that has long been in place. It continues today. And I think we don't have the kinds of problems that they, for instance, have in Boston, which is notorious for being a neuroscience capital, but there are tremendous interinstitutional jealousies. And I think we don't have that disorder. We don't have that mental disorder here.
So I'll just speak as a relative newcomer anyway. I've been in Montreal a little bit more than 4 years. And just to say I've been welcomed by many institutions and am very, very happy to be able to work with the established scientists who are here in many different institutions, and it's been a wonderful opportunity. So I think that speaks to the nature of research in Montreal and in Quebec.
And with the family, what the foundation is doing, the investment in partnership with McGill and the affiliated institution, what's the added value, in addition to the money, because I understand very well that the money is important, but in addition to that, what does it add? Because already you were saying you're doing a lot of collaboration, a lot of interactions. What's the added value of the center?
Well, it's a real catalyst for me. It's obviously, I have a statistical background. I've been working in genetics for many years. I've been working in epigenetics more recently. But to move into the area of mental health, that's new for me. And so the gift from the Ludmer Foundation has enabled that, and it's a really exciting new area of research. And, of course, the opportunity to work with these two guys is a fabulous opportunity that's been enabled by this as well.
So Principal Fortier mentioned a bit the inspiration of Mr. Ludmer. I was giving a talk in Grand Rounds at Columbia 2-3 years ago or so, and, you know, the talk actually goes pretty well. And I looked across, and there were no doubt residents sitting in front, and I don't know if I mind read, but the face basically said to me, well, you know, this is okay, but how in the world does any of this make a difference in my practice? What's the impact, really? What am I going to take back to my clinic, my patient that I'm seeing an hour after this talk is over? And I think, to some extent, what's happened in the creation of the center is that it's catalyzed, and obviously it's funded us, it's equipped us, but it's catalyzed us to say, here's the challenge. Take it to the next level. Do something different, and really move ahead. Hmm. And this, I think, you know, working with Celia and Alan is a joy. I think the three of us feel this. Sometimes in need of lithium occasionally. More than occasionally. And you're no help. But I think there is this feeling that this is, it's as Celia says, it's catalytic in many ways, but part of it is get busy, do something different, do something that's going to have impact.
Well, I think we're in the midst of a revolution, and sometimes we're so close to it, all of us, that you don't even see what's happening. You need 20, 30 years down the road to look back and see what is happening. We have the technology to collect the data, and we now have the IT infrastructures to allow us to analyze the data in ways which were hitherto inconceivable. Clinicians had to categorize disease and disorder into various well-defined boxes so they knew what interventions to apply. The reality is very different from that. Everything is a continuum. Everything is multivariate, whether it's the genes, the behavior, the imaging, the endophenotypes, the measurements in the brain that we can make. All of that information has to be assembled to allow us to identify uniquely what this person's profile is. That allows us to characterize their multivariate profile, excuse the jargon, and at a scientific level, it also allows us to think about personalized medicine, yeah, customized interventions for those individuals. Those things are easy to say. We didn't have the hardware, the technology to allow us to do that kind of analysis until recently on the technology hardware side. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, you have to have the people in place to allow you to take advantage of that technology and bring it to bear on the problem at hand, in this case, neuroscience, neurology, psychiatry. What the Ludmer Foundation donation allowed us to do is to keep in place a cadre of people who are absolutely brilliant at what they do, that under normal circumstances would gravitate out into the technology sector, go work in business, in industry, and we'd lose them to the academic domain. It's very hard to get funding sometimes for something which is as universal as technology. It's like trying to ask for money for electricity or for oxygen. It's so pervasive, you don't even see it. The Ludmer investment allowed us to keep that, the C-Brain team, we call them, in place for years to come. It has a completely paradigm-shifting impact. And please excuse me for that cliche, because I promised myself I would never use that phrase. And now I have.
So maybe you mentioned already a kind of a challenge, personalizing medicine in the field of mental health. Is it the biggest challenge facing you and your colleague? Or?
Yeah, I work more from the developmental side. And so the great frustration really is you have this sense that you can predict children who are at risk. And of course the frustration you ask, well, why don't we do something? Right. And the truth is there's actually some pretty good interventions. I mean, they need to be more pervasive, they need to be more directed, but we don't know how to target them effectively. The truth is we think we've got really good predictors and we don't. We think we can identify kids at risk, and we can't. Hmm. And so what I think we can move towards is an area, the idea of thinking of curing, easing the pain and suffering of mental illness, absolutely. But the issue then at the forefront, I think, is prevention. How do we keep this from occurring? How do we provide support for families and children and societies to keep this from occurring? We are not nearly as advanced as we think we are in terms of being able to target and to move those interventions directly towards the individuals that are needed. So I'll just mention one small component of the Ludmer Center. We have big science, absolutely. And I mean, you know, nobody on this planet, I think, is internationally more connected than Professor Evans. But we also have an investment in the Fondation de Dr. Julien in Hochelaga-Rosemont. We are the research arm of Jules Foundation. It's something he and I have been talking about for many years, but now we can do it. So we can get down to the ground. And so really the challenge is absolutely exactly as Alan laid it out. We need to take the big science, but we need to bring it down. We need to be able to turn to Gilles one day and say, here's what to look for.
Good. Alan, Cecilia.
So prediction modeling from the point of view of a statistician. For a slightly different perspective, there have been, in other areas of research, many, many sort of press releases saying, you know, if you have an extra cup of coffee, it's good, or if you have one more dose of green vegetables, that's bad. So this is an area where doing it right is helpful. So that is where we hopefully want to go. And that's where the infrastructure comes in, doing it with appropriate models, doing it with appropriate controls, doing simulation studies, etc., to try and investigate the performance of the models and to make sure that they are solid and robust and reliable.
Adam?
I'm thinking the importance of translation, of our sometimes pointy-headed science, how it gets into the community, into the clinic. And I apologize to Guy, because Guy has heard this story 3 times in the last 2 days and can probably give this talk better than me. I've just come back from a visit to a longtime collaborative group in Cuba. And many of you will not know this, but the Cubans have a tremendous tradition for very sophisticated mathematical modeling and brain mapping. And I have one of their, the Cuban diaspora, Yasser Ituri Medina is here, and he's the guy that I referred to in the video as having come up with this amazing discovery in Alzheimer's disease. The interesting thing about the Cuban experience is that they absolutely prioritize the translation of these advanced findings into the community, into the clinic. The Ludmer Center is a perfect vehicle for us to help them in some degree with the technology and the science, but to get back from them the experience that they have had in translating those findings into the clinic. We can use that in Quebec. We can use that in our disadvantaged populations. They've got tremendous experience to give to us. And we could repeat that experience in many different countries around the world to whom we're already quite tightly coupled. The Ludmer Center didn't jump fully formed from our heads. It's the natural evolution of something that has been in gestation for the last 25 years. And that's why it's so exciting. This is already hitting the ground running.
Good. My last question, maybe before we open up a little bit. You have here the Dean of the Faculty of Medicine. You have the Principal of McGill University. You have the head of DM&I. You have me. How can we help?
Well, from my point of view.
And again, I'm sure money is important, but
money is like oxygen.
We take it for granted. But seriously, how can we maybe help into the dream that Irving and that you have as well? How can we help?
Well, I think Irving made the point in his remarks, and it bears repeating, that we're breaking the mold of traditional departmental silos. Everything that we're trying to do is cross-disciplinary. And oftentimes you can try and bring in a person who doesn't fit any one of 4 different categories, traditional categories, but is ideal for the kinds of activities that we're talking about here in a multidisciplinary sense. So how do you bring these people in? They might not teach a particular course in a particular department, but they have a constellation of skills which pulls together many elements that is absolutely essential to this. So if I have to ask our esteemed leaders of the university is to come up with creative models to allow these cross-disciplinary staff to be hired.
Good point.
And that's true, I think, also at the training level.
Very important.
There are traditional training models within departments. But to work in this field, you need to have knowledge in a large number of different disciplines. And it may be hard to get that through traditional models of education. So that's another thing that could be considered.
I'll wax historically a bit. I mean, I want to thank...
What is that?
I'll check.
I'm going to venture a guess. They're actually doing a tunnel under the neuro. This is part of McGill's secret project to spy on us. And they try not to blast during regular hours because it disturbs the machines. I'm not saying that's what it is, but it certainly makes sense. I'll go check.
So the people outside said something fell, and they seem calm. But you notice the kid was out of here pretty quick, right? I wanted to answer your question by going back just very briefly to the early days when you and Rich Levin were the people who were so encouraging of this idea, because you got it. And you weren't thinking, well, okay, here's a way to bring in more money. You weren't thinking, oh, well, you know, how much is this going to cost? You just got it, right? Both you and Rich. And then David's support. People get what this is about and the principle. You can't imagine what it's like to work at an institution where you feel like your ideas are valued. I mean, that's beyond words. People aren't looking at you in terms of how much money you're bringing in, how much rent you're paying on this, etc. Okay, a little bit they are, but but they're valuing your thoughts and your ideas, and they're with you in this. And that sounds trivial, but most of my colleagues don't work in institutions where that's the case. So my thanks, first of all, to you and Rich, and then to David, and then our principal. I think we're trying to deal with... Sybil? I think we're in this together. I mean, you know what the challenges are. David knows what they are. The principal knows what they are. The principal had a workshop in which many of us were saying the same things. We need to think in a different framework. We need to not only bring in faculty, we need to be able to promote faculty. How do we promote faculty members who work on the infrastructure that Alan's talking about? Yeah. How do we value them within our academic institution? And we need to adapt. And I think where, you know, Alan, Celia, and I have an advantage to some extent is that we're a little bit out there on the curve, and perhaps our needs are not unique by any means. There's lots of people around this institution, other Quebec institutions, doing similar fusions of their science in different areas, and it's a different world. And the dialogue, simply having people realize this, willing to confront it, government, universities, and faculties, that I think is the enrichment of the situation.
Excellent. I was thinking that one of you will say,
need more money.
You're not neuroscientist. I say, we need to clone Irving Ludman. More people like him.
That can be arranged.
So is there still time? 5 minutes? So if there is a question from the audience, there's mic, I think, on both sides. Yeah, if you go to the microphone there.
Can I talk in French?
Or oh, oui, je veux, oui,
quelqu'un
pas de problème.
Va traduire pour moi? Bonsoir, mon nom est Marie-Blanche. Moi, je suis une graduée de l'Université McGill, mais malheureusement, je suis atteinte de la maladie bipolaire de type 2. Je voulais savoir, moi, quand on m'a annoncé que j'étais malade, un peu comme monsieur dans le film, je ne le croyais pas parce que je me disais, c'est pas possible pour moi. Je suis une graduée de l'Université McGill. Mais oui, je suis malade. Je voulais savoir, étant donné que j'ai déjà fait 3 psychoses, est-ce que j'ai des séquelles dans mon cerveau?
Peut-être une question très, très pointue. On peut répondre à des séquelles dans le cerveau.
À cause des psychoses.
Oui, non, c'est difficile à dire, malheureusement. À ce point-là, on connaît, il y a tellement, c'est un peu comme Dr. Professor Evans a expliqué, les psychoses, les maladies bipolaires, par exemple, oui. Une fonction des, je ne veux pas dire abnormalités, mais un peu des différences dans les circuits diffusés partout dans le cerveau. Est-ce que ça peut être? Oui, peut-être, dans des certains cas. Mais le problème, il manque suffisamment d'informations sur des maladies spécifiques, comme les maladies de dépression bipolaire, à dire, oui, ça c'est les profils typiques dans les cerveaux d'une patiente qui souffre de cette maladie.
Et je regrette répondre dans cette façon, mais c'est simplement impossible de dire à ce point-là pour un individu.
Il y a beaucoup de différences individuelles aussi.
Absolument. Absolument.
Je voulais juste dire aussi à M. Ludemar, merci beaucoup. Qu'est-ce qu'il fait? Puis aussi, moi, étant donné que je ne peux pas travailler, j'ai décidé de donner mon cerveau à la science.
Merci beaucoup.
À mon essai.
Merci beaucoup.
Lynn? Question, Lynn?
Merci beaucoup. Lynn McVeigh, je suis la directrice générale à l'Institut universitaire santé mentale Douglas. Et j'aimerais prendre un petit moment pour remercier surtout Dr. Rouleau, Dr. Heidelman et la principale Fortier de nous accueillir ici avec ces géants en sciences devant nous. Et c'est vraiment un honneur de pouvoir travailler à vos côtés. Et je voulais peut-être, si vous me permettez, je vais passer en anglais, raconter une petite histoire pour la raison pour laquelle quelques-uns d'entre nous sont en retard ici ce soir. Dr. Kirion, you invoked the events that had occurred over the last couple of days and the reactions of the media. And one of the reasons why several of us from the Douglas are a little bit late is because there is currently underway a very sort of significant emergency response to the events in the hospital systems. And this is fairly common when these kinds of events occur, that the hospital systems are given a higher alert. And I've heard of those alerts in the past when I've worked in cancer care or cardiology care. And now we have a mental health alert where we're being asked to work with the police of Montreal to judge whether there may be some individuals that we may not be able to offer the kind of treatment that they deserve and that we may need to be concerned about. And there was reference to stigma a little bit. And so I found it also curious that the that we received a message from the Agence de Montréal that everything was fine and that there was no need for anybody in the healthcare system to really be concerned at this moment in time. And there is the gap. So those of us working in mental health are working in kind of secret and doing this level of alert. And so this links me back to how much hope Irving Ludmer is giving us with respect to being able to think about prevention and screening and early intervention. And the parents of those two young men, if we could put ourselves in their shoes for you know, just 5 seconds and imagine the kind of suffering that they're going through. And if we had these wonderful scientists who will be making breakthroughs in how to intervene and screen early with children and come up with either, you know, maybe it's a vaccine or maybe it's a marker that we discover in an early intervention that we would be able to prevent these tragedies, how much suffering we will be able to reduce in our society. And so I really wanted to join all of our colleagues in thanking Irving Ludmer for his very generous gift and for his vision, and to express how much of an honor it is to be partners in this initiative. Thank you very, very much.
Merci beaucoup. So thank you to all the three panelists, and I think we are moving to the next phase of the program.
Yeah.
Alors bonsoir à tous, je suis David Adelman, je suis doyen vice-principal pour les affaires médicales. L'Université McGill, it's a great pleasure to welcome you all. Je suis absolument ravi que pour une fois le doyen ait le dernier mot. I was trying to think of how to summarize all the wonderful things we've heard. And I was writing down some key words that I heard. I heard about a paradigm shift, even if that is a cliche. I heard about personalized medicine, continuum, translation, breaking the mold. Then there was an explosion. And an alert. It's very hard to summarize all the wonderful things you've heard, and so I thought the best way to approach it was to talk about it from a personal point of view. So for me personally, because there's mental illness in my family, it's very important to see mental illness championed in this way as a focus of research here at McGill. Some in the audience will know we recently, in our faculty, created with the Faculty of Dentistry a strategic research plan, and neuroscience, with a particular attention to mental illness and related disorders, is a focus of that, as is computational biology. And this project, the Ludmer Project, brings both of those priorities together. So for us in the Faculty of Medicine, this is a truly critical center. So from a personal point of view, I'm delighted to be able, as dean, to help foster this kind of research. But the other personal point of view has to do with Irving Ludmer, whom I met in the context of, I didn't get to go to as many dinners as Remy, more meetings in my office. And they weren't always fun meetings, because sometimes things weren't going so well. And thanks to our principal and the vision of Irving Ludmer, in the end, we were able to come to a happy conclusion. And I think we're all very lucky that we're very lucky for the support of the Irving Ludmer Family Foundation, and particularly for the vision of Mr. Irving Ludmer in driving this forward over a long time with remarkable persistence and some also remarkable patience. I, for one, am deeply grateful. So I want to finish by saying thank you to Mr. Irving Ludmer and to his whole family, and to thank you all for being with us here this evening. Thank you very much.